thank you to our sponsors, Digital Magic the Gathering Online Card Specialist, CardHoarder.com, and MTGOTraders.com. And also thank you to our paper magic specialist, GondaPlaid.com, along with Cape Fear Games, a online card store and brick-and-mortar card store. You can find us each week on MTGCast.com, StarCityGames.com, TCGPlayer.com, MyMTGO.com, and MTGSalvation.com.
Hello and welcome, everybody, to a very special post-holidays Monday Night Magic episode 214. And I am joined to bring you this amazing episode by the dead mother of Monday Night Magic, and that is Eric.
Hello, all.
And Eric, you apparently are showing up on more podcasts than pretty much any other Magic podcaster on the planet over the last week or so.
What I have done is I've taken the opportunity to, for anyone who's reached out to me who has a podcast during this last couple of weeks, to go ahead and be on their podcast. I've been on, they've already posted up one of the ones that I've been up with, a Mana Pool, and there'll be a second Mana Pool episode that will go up at some point. I was on their spoiler cast, our spoiler cast, of course, Monday Night Magic last week, and just recently, MTG Radio had me on. They had put up a topic of conversation about a colorless EDH deck, the Karn deck, and talking about the lands that you would need and stuff like that. So back when they did that, I went and searched up. I ran a Gather advanced search to find the kind of lands that could be used. Well, then of course I had to go build the deck because I figured, hey, I think I own most of these lands. So just using the lands that I owned, I went and built the Karn deck as far as the colorless lands go, and just threw in a bunch of fun artifacts and built that. And I talked to them about that deck as well.
Well, I think, and we talked about this before when the big legendary Eldrazi come out, was the same thing, that you'd have to make a colorless EDH deck. And there's something a little extra classy about making a colorless EDH, because you can't use basic lands. You truly have a true Highlander deck where you have one of every card in your deck at the maximum of one, including all the bizarre lands you have to dredge up to make this land the land base for a colorless deck.
Yeah, now I was able to actually get by making it without having to use any of the panoramas. So that's, I figure that a success in that regard, although I'm thinking about maybe adding one or two more in.
Oh, there's so many cool lands when you do a gather search for what can produce colorless mana. There is a ton.
Yeah. The big thing is you have to not only make the colorless, but you then have to tell it to exclude lands that make any
colored
mana.
Yeah. Because I went through and ordered a bunch of cards from, I think at that time I used MTG Fanatic, but I went through and just purchased a bunch of those lands from my Eldrazi EDH deck.
Yeah, I decided that Karn was a little more fun as a general for me than the Eldrazi because he comes down faster, being a 5 CMC general, and he got to go ahead and convert your artifacts, since most of your deck is going to be artifacts, into creatures. So,
and I would agree, after playing it as an Eldrazi EDH deck, and we've talked about this, where in the end I found myself being underwhelmed in the end with Eldrazi just in general. I was really excited for them in the set, and then when I actually got to play with them, I got the meh feeling from them. Because
yeah,
15 mana is a lot.
Yeah, I don't know that I've gotten the meh feeling from them, although I don't know that I've really... I haven't ever cast an Emrakul, so... But if I had, I would be excited. Although, I tell you what, when we start talking about what we've been playing or decks and whatever, I'd like to talk about a very cool thing that happened with me in draft where I beat an Eldrazi.
Oh, you did? Like,
yes.
One on the table, you mean?
Yeah, one that was cast and that attacked me. I still was able to beat it, and we can come back and talk about that in a future segment.
Yeah, I can't wait till I hear people like using Mitotic Ooze to, Mitotic Slime to beat this. Like, oh, I sacked it. Oh, I got more. Oh, I got more. I win.
That is such a great card.
So, Eric, we have you put a bunch of Magic news this week on our list, but should we start with the M11? That's the big thing. The spoiler has been just blossoming over the past week. We went from 100-some cards to right now it's around 207 on the unofficial spoiler list.
Ah, okay. Let me go to my Google Reader and see what MTG Salvation spoiler. There's 26 new ones that I have not looked at yet.
Yeah, a lot of them are ones that you are already familiar with. These are some of the functional reprints that are going to be in the set, or just true reprints. So I pointed out a couple that I wanted to talk about, then I'll let you do the same thing.
Okay.
So a few of the big updates is confirmed on the Mother Coast. The Mother Coast. That should be the new names of the website. Instead of the Mothership or Wizard of the Coast, it's just Mother Coast. So the Mother Coast website is they confirmed that all five of the original Lorwyn Planeswalkers will be in the set.
Ooh, yes.
So a lot of people were really hoping to get a second chance of getting a Jace Mind Sculptor. Fortunately, you're going to be getting Jace Balerion. So, but at least now we know exactly which Planeswalkers are going to be in the set. And for me, as being more of a casual, you know, quasi-competitive tribal player, I want to point out the few cards that had me really excited. We're going to be hearing from Eric, and we'll be hearing from Conley and Gavin and Jack and all those guys further down the road about what they like. So the couple key creature types that actually got some love in this set are we got another Ooze and Mitotic Slime, which we have talked about is fantastic. And I was very tickled to hear that that was on the top 10 kind of interesting creature types on Mark Rosewater's list.
I bet you were.
Not that he could go higher on the list, but he got underlined and now he's like italicized on my list. The other ones that have me excited is we have a couple of new constructs because we have Triskelion back. We have the Steel Overseer. We have a new plant wall, the one that's the just plain better wall of wood. Now it has reach. And we also have a new ox. So now we're up to six different ox creatures. So it's actually so now we can actually have that Pillarfield ox deck that we've all dreamed about.
Or at least Tom has dreamed about.
Yes, I have dreamed about. So now I can actually, that probably be my next tribal time with Tom will be an ox deck. Because now we actually have enough to have a little bit of variety in that. Because some of the tribes where you only have four or five of that creature, you have no choice. You play four of each one. So at least now you can mix and match a little bit. Other ones is from kind of more the EDH side, I want to point out a couple is, and these ones, I love colorless cards that have a really nice effect or great for EDH. Because you can use them in any EDH deck. So the couple, the colorless ones I liked was Brittle Effigy. Have you seen this one yet, Eric?
I have. As a matter of fact, it's probably going to find its way into my Karn deck because it's colorless and it's a way to deal with creatures.
Exactly. And Brittle Effigy, I mean, it's just I can't wait to see the art on this. As I loved cards like Blazing Effigy. I hope they have a similar art style. But Brittle Effigy is just one colorless. It's a rare. It's an artifact. It says 4-mana tap, exile Brittle Effigy, exile target creature.
On the visual spoiler, too.
Oh, is it?
Yes.
That's something. I always have a hard time finding that on the Wizard of the Coast side, I'll be honest with you.
I will send you a link.
Because I would like to see the art on that. And I was also a little surprised on this card that it wasn't a creature. That didn't have like a 0/1 toughness or something like this. Because the effigies in the past were typically creatures.
Yeah, this one's more like a statuette.
Yeah, so that surprised. I guess I wouldn't say disappointed, but I was hoping to see it be a little more of a creature type. All right, Eric is nice enough to give me the visual spoiler right now.
Yeah, and so if you're actually someone else who's looking for the visual spoiler, when you go to Daily MTG or the site, off on the side there's a section that says like New to Magic. It says products, and under the products section there's a Magic 2011, and under that there's visual spoiler. So it's on the little sidebar underneath Magic the Gathering is kind of the way you navigate to that.
And I also want to say, whoever is telling artists how they should be depicting Juggernaut and Magic Card Art should be beaten to death with a hose. You went from having this awesome, huge, this monstrous, kind of ogre-like crushing creature, now we have this stupid-looking, looks like something from G.I. Joe or He-Man. It's like a rolling...
Definitely more He-Man-ish, yes.
Yeah, it's like a rolling station wagon with horns on it. How is this a Juggernaut? A Juggernaut's a big, huge monstrosity. Should almost look like the Colossus of Sardia. That's what I imagine a Juggernaut looking like.
Well, I understand wanting to be that rolling, battering ram-looking thing, but could you make it more an homage to the original art?
Yeah, like, this thing looks like it needs a pilot or something riding on it.
Yeah, I'm certainly not happy with the art. I'm glad it's back. I just wish it had better art. But that's one of the few cards that in the set that you can actually say, gee, I wish it had better art. Most of the cards have really spectacular art.
Are just downright phenomenal, to be honest.
Yeah.
Let's see, other ones I liked. And this is also one where if you don't like this card, you do not like Magic. I'm just going to put this right out there. And this card is Mystifying Maze. Because everybody knows my favorite expansion set of all time was Dark. One of the coolest cards from Dark is Maze of Ith. And in some ways, this is our new fixed Maze of Ith. Have you seen this one yet, Eric, at all?
I'm trying to find my Google Reader. It is one of the ones I have not yet gotten a chance to look at.
So I'm going to give you the text. So this one is just downright cool. And Aaron Forsyth even talked about this one on his Twitter feed over the last few days. Mystifying Maze, it's a land, it's, of course, still rare. Tap, you can add one colorless mana to your mana pool, so it already has something over Maze of Ith with that. And it says, 4-mana tap, exile target attacking creature an opponent controls. At the beginning of the next end step, return it to the battlefield, tapped under its owner's control. And where Air Enforcement was talking about this is in their Future League. Initially, Mystifying Maze was like Maze of Ith, where you could target your own creatures as well. But they quickly realized that everybody was only using this to target their own creatures, never an opponent's. They said, that is not how we designed this card to work. So that's why they added in the clause it has to be an opponent's creature.
But man, does it take the creature, I mean, out. I mean,
and then it comes back into play tapped, which is even cooler.
Yeah, I mean, that's it. I mean, it's gone for their turn. It's gone for your turn. It's done. And then, you know, if you take 5 or 6 more turns, you know, for somehow, it'd be tapped during those times, too.
So this is why it's just a well-designed card, and the art is pretty cool. It just shows a very gloomy tree, and there's obviously a big maze on it. And it taps for colorless mana. And I think that's pretty key. This is not going to slow you down, and then it's just going to scare your opponent when you're starting to get to that turn 4, 5, or 6. And it seems like any sort of control deck is going to find this pretty darn useful. If you're going to have a blue-white or mono-blue control player, you're just sitting there with all your mana open, say, hey, try to attack me and see what happens. You have a good guess what's going to happen to your guy. It's going to get stuck in the maze.
Oh, yeah.
Other ones I liked is we have the new Wildfire with Destructive Force. Basically, it's Wildfire for 5. 5 mana, or 5 colorless, 2 red, takes off. Each player gets rid of loses 5 lands, does 5 damage to all creatures in play. I was surprised we saw another Wildfire-type card, so I think a lot of people did not like Wildfire. And this was around the Urza Saga time. And now, Eric, did you ever play, I think they called it like Mono Red Brown, or just Mono Brown, was just, basically it was like Wildfire, lots of artifact, mana acceleration cards like Covetous Dragon, where you just blew out a bunch of mana artifacts, and then Wildfired everything away, and then killed them with a Covetous Dragon?
I did not. I was not playing competitive back then.
That was a really annoying deck to play against.
Yeah, I'm one of the jerks that enjoyed playing Affinity.
then you are a jerk. And Eric, the last one I wanted to mention, this is, I believe, maybe the worst card title I've ever read in Magic.
Oh, yeah, okay. It has to be Mass Polymorph.
Yes. So this one just jumped out, and I'm just like, a lot of times on the unofficial MTG submissions kind of preview or spoiler page, they will, if it's coming from a different language, they'll have a kind of a temporary card name up for what it does. I assume that's what this was. I'm like, oh, it's going to be something that, you know, it's like a polymorph for all the creatures in play, but, you know, it's not actually going to be called Mass Polymorph, because that's just boring and really unimaginative. So I pull up the actual, you know, visual spoiler, and behold, it is called Mass Polymorph.
Yeah.
So in my mind is this, are we simply seeing a whole new design space being opened where we're just going to use Mass and then an existing Magic card as a way to design new cards? So I want to see Mass Ovinomancer, Mass Pongify, and then Mass Twiddle. Otherwise known as one half of Cryptic Command. I guess you can't untap with Cryptic Command.
It's only a quarter of the Cryptic Command, so...
Yes. So, I mean, what are your thoughts? It's a cool ability. It's basically a Mass Polymorph. It's polymorphing all of your creatures. What do you think when you read this name? Are you just like, hey, they really mailed this in? This is like Tom Cruise in every movie in the past 10 years. He's mailing this one in.
I don't know. I mean, the name doesn't really, you know, hit great. But I mean, I think it's interesting. I mean, if you're going to just polymorph one thing, it's more expensive than polymorph, right? So
yes, it takes a 5 and a blue, I believe.
Yeah, so it makes that effect a little more difficult to achieve. But then it also, it's also interesting if you have. A large token making machine, you know, and you want to have like, you know, 3 or 4 win conditions in your deck or whatever, you can get them all out. That's, yeah, I don't know. We'll see how it's applied. I'm done saying it's not going to work or it sucks or things like that. I'm going to hedge my bets here. This has the potential to be broken, I think. Not as like it's going to be not a broken card, but a potential to be used abusively. You know, if someone really pushes it, you know, make Conley or someone, you know.
And are you surprised, Eric, that so far they brought back a few reprints that I like? They have the Cycler Artifacts where if a player plays a spell of this color, you gain a life.
I'm not surprised they brought those back. Those are pretty staple.
Yeah, and I like
them. And they fixed them a while ago to be exactly where they want them to be. And basically it falls down into, right, new players love life gain. So this is a, you know, here's something for the new players to get, you know, to feel like they're really doing something cool, and then to eventually learn about how, hey, I'm so smart, I'm no longer valuing this life gain that's not really that great.
And a part of me is kind of curious so far as we have Voltaic Key, which is, we know that's going to be in there, the one mana, one untap a target artifact. I'm surprised we haven't seen an artifact mana card yet, like a Golem's Eye or something like this.
I'm not super surprised about that in the core set. My guess is that Scars of Mirrodin is going to have more than enough, and that you don't want to oversaturate the area with it. I mean, you already have it, Everflowing Chalice and... you know, things of that nature already, so...
I guess Voltaic Key does want to make love to Everflowing Chalice.
Oh, yeah, especially if you get that Chalice, you know, kicked at 4 or whatever.
Yeah, like anywhere from, like, 3 to 4. Basically, it seems like, yeah, 2 plus mana artifact is kind of the key point.
Yeah. So...
So, Eric,
I was very surprised to see Black Knight coming back. You know, White Knight has shown up periodically, but you know, those two knights along with the as a minor knight theme in the set here, so that's something I found interesting.
Yeah, especially when it's completely unchanged. It's a 2/2 first strike with protection from white. It's what you expect.
Yeah. And, of course, Acidic Slime is coming back, so that should make you happy.
Yeah, well, I mean, as Conley would say, that is probably arguably the best ooze that there is. And I'd say it's hard to argue with that.
Yeah. So let's see. What is... let's see what Inspired Charge is. I haven't read this one yet. It is 2WW. Instant creatures you control get +2/+1 until the end of turn. So it's like a mini overrun for white.
And it's cool because it's an instant, so it truly is a battle trick.
Yeah, and it's a common. It does your whole team, so it's not just one guy, you know. So, I mean, that's going to blow some people out in Limited.
Sounds like a cheerleader. It does your whole team.
And then, let's see, Autumn's Veil. So this is the new hoser for green. Green gets a 1 green instant. Spells you control can't be countered by blue or black spells this turn, and creatures you control can't be the target of blue or black spells this turn. Notice that this spell itself is not uncounterable.
Yes. I don't know. What do you think? It seems, I mean, it's fast, it's 1 mana, but just sort of paints a big target on that spell for the counter for your control player.
Yeah, but I mean, then they have to have enough mana to counter 2 spells. Because presumably whatever you're going to cast after this is something that they're going to want to counter.
Seems like, you know, to me, I'd rather just play a Gaea's Revenge. Be like, oh, here's an 8/5, haste, can't counter it, can't target it, deal with that.
Yeah. I mean...
It seems like kind of like an elf spell, where like you're going to be powering a large number of spells and you want to protect him for that turn.
Well, but it also, you know, it also protects your guys. So, I mean... If you're ready to go, let's say you're ready to go hit them with whatever the new overrun is, and you're about to bust that bad boy out, you know, you play this. If it resolves, you know your guys are getting through.
Well, but not necessarily. It doesn't say they can't be blocked by blue creatures or black creatures. They just can't be targeted by spells.
Yeah, but the new overrun gives them trample. So if you're playing green guys who can't get bigger than the blue and the black, you know, your blue and black opponent's creatures, then you have other problems.
Yeah, I mean, so from your side, Eric, like, do you consider yourself more of a casual player, more a competitive player? Like, where do you kind of, what viewpoint do you come from when you look at these cards?
I've started to come from more of a, it's funny, I was just talking to the guys from MTG Radio about this. It's like, My gaming is turning much more casual. I'm not building the major competitive decks anymore. I've realized I have no hope to compete in Standard or any other really constructed format because I don't have time to play test, so I'm never going to do well on that. I really enjoy drafting, so Limited is something I would compete on. But, you know, so I build much more casually for myself
But on the other hand, like when I'm here, I know that you lean on a lot of the other hosts to kind of give a tournament perspective. So I'm constantly evaluating cards from that tournament perspective all the time.
Well, I just, the reason I'm asking is coming from more of a casual viewpoint is when I see these more specific color hoser cards, I tend to not really care about them. Because a lot of times in Casual Magic, it's not like you have a sideboard for a one-on-one game. You're designing decks that tend to be slower, but also more well-rounded, so you can deal with whatever is coming at you in a multiplayer game. So I don't think I'd ever have something like an Autumn's Veil in my deck.
Yeah, it would require me to... You know, I guess Limited might be someplace where I might play it. You know, if you're going up against the matchup with the black deck, you know, you might put that in so that they can't kill your guys in mid-combat. They can't blow you out that way or something.
And I've also heard from Conley and just a lot of people in general is I was wondering, when they see these kind of cards where it's a very concrete example of what it does, is this is meant to hose blue and black, is some people don't like it when they feel Wizards is choosing how to make decks for them. Well, like, oh, here is a sub-theme in this set. You should play these cards together. They don't like that. And so I wonder when we see what to me looks like a pure sideboard card that says you should play this against a blue or black control deck, they're like, hey, I don't need you to print me specific hosers, but give me some, you know, key green spells or creatures that can let me do that, that I can sideboard with.
No, I think actually you see the pros enjoying these narrow type cards or whatever because it gives them a tool to put in their kit. You know, it's like a golfer goes out, you know, and needs to have a certain, you know, certain clubs to be prepared for a course. You know, this is the same sort of thing, I'm guessing. Whereas I think most people actually do like these sub-themes. That's why they do them, right? This is why tribal is such a big deal. One of the most popular things behind gold is that people really love to have these tribal cards and the synergy that goes along with them. So when you put a knight sub-theme in or whatever, people get jazzed about that.
And what do you think so far of the kind of our new knight captain that came out that gives them all indestructibility?
Indestructibility is pretty big.
First strike, +1/+1, and indestructible for a 3-mana 2/2 first strike. And he's a non-legendary. He's just a straight-up human knight.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, he still dies to Doomblade.
Well, he does.
Yeah.
So does Rock Egg, Eric. And you want your Rock Egg to get Doombladed.
Yeah, I'm upset with Rock Egg. This is where I become the old fogey.
Are you compared to Rock Egg?
Yeah, I like my Rook Egg. I that was my yeah. So it,
so if anybody is not an old curmudgeon like Eric is, and also like me, is a Rook Egg was, and initially came on Arabian Nights. That's probably why people have such a fond memory of it. 3 colorless and a red. It was a creature egg. So it's a little different than this one. It was a 0/3. If it was put into a graveyard, you get a 4/4 red ruck creature token with flying into play at the end of the turn, which is a little different. This one's nice. At least you get it right away.
It's an update for sure. I mean, it's definitely an update. And, you know, it's just one of those things where, you know, this is one of the few instances where I'm going back to, man, I really miss my old flavorful Rook Eggs. I mean, another thing is, like, I have a bunch of them. It's always great. Like when they reprint a card that you have a bunch of, you know, and you can go ahead and because people want to pimp out their decks with the older cards. So you can go ahead and trade some of your older cards, like Curdape, when it was reprinted in the core set. I think it was the core set where it was reprinted. Whatever it was reprinted recently,
It showed up back in a 9th edition.
Yeah, there you go. So it seems recently for me.
And some of the arts is, like, I think if you're an older player, is when you think of a Curdape, you think of the original Arabian Nights revised art. Of just a little, the Jane Goodall, you know, gorilla just hanging in the woods with the red eyes, you know, just doing its thing.
Yeah, and a lot of the players around my area like to pimp out their deck with older cards or cooler versions of cards or whatever. So I was able to trade away some of my Curdapes for, you know, newer cards at an increased value because it's being played again.
And I also, and kind of talking about how things have changed, looking at old cards, the old ways, is they have really tried to fit the color pie where certain colors have things. White is now known for flying. I do miss that red doesn't get a lot of birds anymore. Because when I think about red, I still think about red flyers. You have, like, Rock of Courageous, you have Rucka giving you nice flyers. I sort of miss that part of the pie. I know it's been redivisioned, but I miss it. And I also know that when they went through and they rechanged all the creature types, big one was with Lorwyn, is that like, something like Rock of Courageous used to be a summon rock, R-O-C. And that was, to me, it was a very cool sort of
flavorful
creature type. It wasn't just a bird. This is like this big, mystical, super condor-like thing that sit on top of a mountain with a guy squished in his claw. Now it's just a bird like a Squadron Hawk is not bad, but a Squadron Hawk should not be in the same family as like a Rock of Courageous.
Yeah, they're all birds. They have wings, hollow bones, whatever. Hey, but you know, there is a bird.
Don't you dismiss my thoughts, Eric. with your hollow bones, evolution arguments. This is intelligent design, Eric. That is what magic is based on, is intelligent design. Don't try to tell me. These cards did not evolve out of a primordial soup, Eric. They were guided by a hand.
You're right. And that hand guided a special bird to be a buy-the-box promo.
Yes. So the buy-the-box promo is going to be Birds of Paradise, which is just a good buy-a-box promo anyways. I got excited and threw this on the show notes because once I actually saw the art for this, I got pretty excited.
Yeah, the art is pretty sweet.
So, Eric, is this something? Can you explain exactly how the buy-a-box promo works? I've heard some people feel like they didn't quite understand this process where they bought a box through their brick-and-mortar card store and didn't get one. And this is for past sets.
So it's you gotta order early because you know it's essentially a loyalty reward, right? So you're gonna buy a box from a brick and mortar store, like Newcastle Comics down the street from my house. So I go in, I tell them I would like to pre-order a box of M11, and I'm one of the people who one of the early people who gets it in. I think I don't know exactly how many they get, but it's not a lot. I mean, I think it's in the neighborhood of 10 or less. So the first, 10 or so people who buy a booster box of cards from the brick-and-mortar store gets one of these, sweet Birds of Paradise.
Well. It looks like it's going to be the first. It says the first 20. Only the first 20 at a store will get this.
Yeah.
So basically, there's a way of saying support your local card store. The first 20 will get one of these. The art looks fantastic. To me, this looks more like what a biological Bird of Paradise looks like. The big, long, flowy tail. Otherwise, looks like somewhat of a normal bird. The background is a little... So they sort of mailed it in on this one because it's just some clouds on the back.
The background's no tropical island.
No, which is too bad. That's something I think they missed out a little bit. But overall, looks nice. And really, from the casual kitchen player to the pro player, I think we all like Birds of Paradise. That's a pretty good choice for a buy-a-box promo.
Okay, so I think there's a Mea Culpa that has to come next.
Oh, yes, I'm glad you're here, Eric, because it's both our faults.
I owe the Mea Culpa on this.
No, it's you put this, I mean, it was a really good discussion. This show is called Monday Night Magic, but as you probably have heard, is that we do work. Eric actually has offspring that have come from him, so he has to take care of them. It's required by law, and he loves them. But so sometimes we record this show on Sunday night. And every once in a while, Wizards will drop us a little or a huge monstrous boulder of a nugget on Monday morning. Here is where it happened. It landed right on our crotches.
It just so happens that we were just speculating about that nugget the day before it's announced.
We were not the only podcast, but we are the one that cut it the closest where we had our podcast come out. Honestly, right after that. Everybody's just like, what you mean? We just saw it. It's like, we didn't know that when we recorded it. So get off my back.
It's funny because I also had a second podcast, which is actually the first podcast where we talked about this on the Mana Pool, come out like on Thursday of that week too. So I mean, this week they make the announcement, and then I have two podcasts that come out where I'm talking about this theory that you're not going to be ordering blockers. Well, surprise, you're still ordering blockers. it's still going to happen that way. So. Yeah, you're still ordering blockers. It just happens to be Death Touch. They've changed it so that Death Touch deals lethal damage. Any amount of damage from a Death Touch creature is considered lethal, which is actually a really elegant way to handle it. So kudos to Wizards.
And, you know, in the article where Aaron Forsythe discussed this, he discussed the fact that, you know, they really did a crappy job when they did Death Touch in the M10 rules announcement, that they were trying to make it work, and that it got down to the deadline and they just put in what they had, which they weren't very happy with, but, you know, it maintained Death Touch's functionality. So this does as well. The cool thing now, though, is with Trample, if you have something with Trample and Death Touch,
then it gets awesome.
Gets a lot better. Because you could, okay, a point here, I kill you, a point there, I kill your other blocker, a point there, I kill your third blocker, and my other three damage tramples over to you. Even if those blockers are like a 10-5 and a 4-1 and a whatever, you know.
Yeah, because it's nice when they give examples in the official Wizards of the Coast, the Mother Coast website, is they say a 4-4 trample and Death Touch can assign one damage to a blocking 8-8 and then the other three damage to the defending player. And the like you said, the way it's worded now where all damage is lethal, it's still going to kill the 8-8 like it should with Death Touch. And you're still ordering things, which is cool. What else do we have, Eric? So yeah, so we want to explain that we did read this. We had just recorded before that came out. We have a new player rewards program for Magic the Gathering Online, which some of you people do play, I hear about. And this is a thing where we have, it's the monthly program. Basically, you get points.
You sign up.
Yes.
It's so simple, right? You sign up. You put your email on, and then they're going to, if you play in events, then they're going to give you promo cards. It's a lot like the physical one. The other thing, my understanding, is that they give you a pretty cool email that also kind of details some different stuff. I think the guys from Limited Information or Limited Resources have talked about the emails that you get as well.
Yeah, it's a very nice summary of your play, where if you're like me and you logged in like twice a month, it'll tell you you've logged in twice that month, and you feel really ashamed.
Or like me, I haven't logged on since, I don't know, maybe Kamigawa Block. So it's been a while. And there's just different tiers. So you get different points. They put you on different tiers, and they outline exactly what promo cards you're going to get. You know, there's alternate art land cards, and there's
we get the boob job. You get the boob judge Elvish Visionary here. There we go.
Yeah, well, you know. I got one of those the other night from Friday Night Magic.
Ooh, Blue Elemental Blast.
Ooh. Actually, that's probably a pretty big deal, because I don't think that's available any other way.
It is not available in Magic Online.
Yeah, so that's a pretty good deal. Your legacy players are going to want that, the Magic Online legacy players.
Oh, that's true. It does have the old art as well, which is kind of slick. I like that.
And what else we got? So MPR, is this correct that MPR is running low on textless foil lightning bolts?
Yeah, and this is just based off of some reports when people got their Magic Rewards mailings. This is in the cases where they're supposed to get more than one textless foil lightning bolt. And inside their mailing, they had this letter that read, "Attention MPR rewards recipients. Due to the increased success of Magic the Gathering 2010, we do not have enough Foil Lightning Bolt MPR reward cards to completely fulfill the June 2010 MPR reward mailings. We gave enough to ensure that each player that is due a Foil Lightning Bolt card receives at least one. If you were owed more than one Lightning Bolt, instead you will receive two Foil Cryptic Command MPR reward cards for each Lightning Bolt you should have received." That's pretty good. Instead of getting a Lightning Bolt, you get two Cryptic Commands.
You know, it may have also been two Damnations. There was a guy at my store who opened his MPRs there and had the Texas Foil Damnations.
Oh, okay. So this may
I didn't see him read his letter. Maybe his letter read a little differently. I don't know.
So that is where this whole story has come from, is people actually getting these letters with their MPR mailings. And I think I've gotten like an MPR card in the mail like two or three times in my life, so I will not get one of these letters.
I got my Texas Foil Lightning Bolt this weekend.
Well, good for you.
Yeah.
What, you just want to rub it in just a little bit more?
Yeah, I got that and a Texas Harrow.
Ooh.
And Texas another card, too, that I don't remember.
Texas Harrow. Harrow is becoming one of a classic card now, I'd have to say.
It's been reprinted three times, so.
So what else we got? We had the Japan Nationals happen this past weekend. We want to say...
I got his name for you.
Okay.
Katsuhiro Mori.
Thank you. I didn't want to say this. I've watched actually the first three Karate Kid movies over the past week. So when all I have in my mind is Mr. Miyagi and Pat Moriarty. That's all I can think of right now. It's amazing.
Yeah, I don't even think I butchered his name that bad. But he's the winner of Japan Nationals.
No, I think he did a very good job. I try to think. We don't have our big tourney guys here. Is there anything really to know about this?
I have no idea. I didn't actually follow it.
Yeah, I know that Bill Stark. I think Bill Stark was out there doing coverage.
Yeah, so, it was a kind of one with a kind of red deck wins type of deck. You know, Ball Lightnings, Goblin Guides, Hell's Thunder, Hellspark Elementals, Kerrigan Dragon Lords, lots of burn. Took them all the way.
Yeah, sort of like the same kind of build that Joey Mishpiegel had for the StarCityGames.com Open Series Standard event in St. Louis.
It's really interesting that they keep printing pretty decent burn, where these mono red burn decks and continue to do well. Seems like in every new standard that we get.
You know, and the thing is that I think a lot of people forget that it's actually a lot more skill intensive than a lot of people understand. You really have to know how to apply your burn and what things are very important in it.
Yeah, what do you need to kill of your opponents, or should you just keep throwing it at their face?
Yeah. And speaking of Japanese things and burn decks, Jace versus Chandra dual deck is being released in a very limited run, and the Jace and the Chandra are
hideous.
Oh, no, I love this.
Oh, Eric.
I'm buying it just for those two cards.
Eric, you're killing me here.
It's that manga art. I mean, it is classic manga art, too. I mean, this reminds me of like Robotech from my youth. So
I guess this is probably coming down to do you like or not like manga art? I am firmly in the do not like camp, so I saw this. I'm like, pass.
No, see, on the other hand, I'm like, I'm buying this just for these two cards.
Wow.
And I'm trying to figure out if I can get away with putting them in my cube, because I usually have people play my cube who don't necessarily know what all the cards do, and these being in Japanese would kind of be a downer for that, but they're going to be so sweet.
And now, how's that going to work, though? Is the way they are saying this is going to come out December 3rd, it's going to be $19.99 US, but it's going to be a very limited release. Like, how are you getting your hands on one of these?
My local retailer will sell them at retail price.
Ooh. So there, it sounds like they are, I believe the term is moral.
Yes, they're exceptionally moral. My local shop owner is exceptionally, Steve at Newcastle. He's the owner and he runs it very well, and he's always really good about treating his players right. So yeah, no extreme price hikes on this or the From the Vault stuff. So that's my hookup.
It seems like we're on a dangerous, slippy slope, Eric. We've got Vanguard on Magic cards. I don't know. I'm scared.
It's, you know what? It's fine. It's not like the manga art is in the core set or something. I mean, that would be pushing it. But I mean, I think it's Folio, Ken Folio.
Like, who does the art?
No. Like Cooperation. I think that's what it is. I think that's the card I'm thinking of.
Oh, yeah. For like in existing sets right now.
Yeah, if you look back at old sets, like, go ahead and pull up Cooperation and get.
Oh, I mean, he's done quite a few pieces of art.
Yeah, I know. And if you look at his style, I'm like, really, I don't particularly care to have that kind of art in Magic. I don't think that's what we really want the sets to look like. But you know, if he did like a one-off thing, like in these dual decks or whatever, gave alternate, I could see where that'd be kind of cool. I think that's the kind of place for your out of the normal art. Whereas I think that your more traditional fantasy art is the kind of art that you really want to see in Magic cards right now, you know, in your core sets and your regular sets. But for alternate arts, I don't have a problem with that.
Yeah. And yeah, I feel like we actually did 48 different pieces of Magic, 48 pieces of Magic art.
And if you see one, you can probably identify it instantly.
Yeah, and then you'll see, I know what other cards he's done automatically, because it is a very unique... Yeah, very animated style.
So, you know, speaking of things being updated, like the art there, the packs that are going to be contained in the Deck Builder's Toolkit, those are going to be updated with new sets that come out. So pretty soon you're going to start seeing these Deck Builder Toolkits come out with M11 packs instead of M10 packs, in them, which that makes sense.
Well, it's good they're trying to keep this current, though, and useful.
Yeah.
So you easily could have let this stagnate at Walmart until it just slowly died away and rotted into dust.
And, which I don't think they're going to do for this product. It's a really great entry-level product. I don't know if you ever had a chance to crack one of these things open, but it's really good. You can build several decks out of them.
I've watched a couple of opening videos, but I have not had one myself.
Yeah, I bought one for my son, and he was with the stuff he got out of the pre-release for M10,
And this, he's easily able to build a white weenie deck, and we're in the process of building a couple more decks out of it.
And Eric, I believe you put the next one on, which is actually kind of an interesting story a little bit.
Yeah, so the Czech and Slovak nationals, they have an English language site to cover some of what has happened here.
It's only because you're thinking, Czech, Slovak nationals, and it's brought to you by Sean Fitzgerald, an Irish guy living in Prague. Which sounds great. Be like Carl Fredrickson covering the Czech nationals.
So let's see. There's standings. Open that a new tab. And and they're two separate nationals. So don't let it confuse you. They're not the same. The same people. It's different ones. So it looks like Blaviska Gabor is in the first place, and I don't know if that means he's won it or if he is first in the place after the Swiss.
The Swiss national.
Yes.
What is it, Eric? Yes.
Another thing. Yeah, you can't make a slip on this show without paying for
it. No, you can't.
And then Cyril Dundra. That's after first round, so apparently I'm just a horrible person and missing it completely. Let's see if the last post maybe has the final standings.
Yeah, at least it's the number one person has 30 points when I look at the last post.
Yeah, and that's after the Swiss. So
this would be, the one I'm looking at is for, I don't know which one this is for.
which country did I open? I don't know. Yeah, the thing is those are after the Swiss, so... I did scroll down to the bottom. They have the top eight deck lists, but I didn't see where they announced who the winners were. So you can find the top eight deck lists from both standings at the link that will be included in the show notes here. And, it's some decent coverage. The guy is writing about the different matches that went on. And so there you go.
Yeah, so you're right, though. I do want to give kudos to Sean Fitzgerald for doing... he's got player pictures, bios. It's really like the mothership's coverage, but being really sounds like done by a guy on his own.
Yeah, on a message board.
It has pack by pack for the drafts. It's really pretty crazy.
Yeah, so it probably got some cooperation from the tournament organizers or whatever, and congratulations. I mean, that's a really cool thing. So if you're really craving nationals coverage because maybe you're prepping for U.S. nationals, it might be something you want to check out.
All right, we've got that.
We got two Grand Prix. There an information been announced for Portland and Gothenburg.
Oh, I thought it was Gotham.
Gothenburg. Yeah, whatever. Gothen. You say Gothen, I say Gotham. Let's call the whole thing off.
Batman.
Yeah, you guys can read the links on that. It just announces the different formats and the side events and things like that are going on. World Wake is going to be finished printing soon. Our friends over at Mana Nation. They went ahead and just commented on the fact that retailers have been asked to put in their final orders of World Wake. So now your secondary, your distributors will probably still have some for a little while as well. But it's definitely time to go buy World Wake, tell your retailer that you'd like some more if you want to try to hit the Jace lottery.
That is the question I think that has come up with this is what happens to the pricing of Jace?
Jace is only going to go up in value, ever.
Oh, man. That is just painful.
I don't think you're going to find Jace ever for less than 60, and I know he's like 90 right now, and I would be surprised if he drops much below that. I mean, he's saying play in Legacy. He's not a card that's going to decrease in value. People are always going to want Jace 2.0.
You wonder if they, when they were kind of making this, if they knew this card was going to be kind of this crazy popular.
They had to know it was going to be popular.
Yeah, because right now we're looking at $80 on Star City Games. That's what I'm just looking at. And if you want a foil one, if they had any, it'd be $130 for a foil one.
Oh, please let me crack a foil one at some point in time.
Yes. You can finally get your kids those the braces that they really need.
Yeah, so...
What's this about a Ravnica Block Seal turning on July 17th on Magic Online, Eric?
Wizards announced that they were going to hold this special seal event. They sometimes do these one-off special events. And so July 17th at 11 a.m. Pacific Daylight Time, In the premier events room, they're going to have a 30-ticket event. You don't need any packs, and they're going to give you 2 packs of Ravnica, 2 guild packs, and 2 dissension booster packs. And they have a minimum of 33 players, 512 maximum, 6 rounds Swiss. And it payouts all based on your match points. So as long as you get 9 points, which would be winning half the rounds, you're going to get one of each booster pack, which means you'd be able to draft.
That's pretty cool. So,
and it looks like they're going to give you a promotional version of We Dragonauts.
Yeah.
Somebody fill in Conley.
Yeah, Conley doesn't want one of those. You can send it to him for Christmas.
And, so there's that. And then StarCityGames.com Open Series in Baltimore, they changed the scheduling on that to be November 20th and 21st. The reason they changed that was Grand Prix Nashville had to be rescheduled. And that rescheduling put it at the same time as the Baltimore Open Series. So Star City Games went and moved the Open Series. So one of the things that when this was announced on Twitter that I know Conley asked and I retweeted was, you know, why couldn't this be done for Colorado? And the answer came back is that they tried, but they couldn't get it arranged. So
okay. So it was just more of a scheduling thing.
Yeah, you know, national scheduling came out, and I think I saw a tweet from Aaron Forsyth that said that, you know, the scheduling of nationals at the same time as that event was inadvertent. Not something that they tried to do, but once they realized it was done, it was too late.
Let's see, is that the last of the Magic News, Eric? It's hard for me to imagine this.
It is the last of the Magic News.
So, Eric, we have been waiting patiently for the What You've Been Playing portion of this to hear about your amazing and somewhat unbelievable survival of an Eldrazi attack.
Yes, so
I'm imagining Cloverfield, but in real life and during a draft.
Okay, so here it is. I'm getting beat down by my opponent, and he's definitely got board supremacy. When I finally get out my white invoker, and I'm now able to tap down his team on his attack step every time and start beating in it too. So he's around 20 life when I start this off, so I'm starting to beat him down. And I have a Keening Stone on the board, but I can't mill him out because I know he has Ulamog, the Infinite Gyre, in his deck.
Ah, okay.
So
hit away from the cast so you can mill him?
Yeah, but the thing is, I'm at a very low life total. I'm like at 4 life when I start tapping down his team. So, and on his board, he already has like 2 Nest Invaders and a Hatcher. And I mean, he's got some stuff there. So, I think the guys who I have not dealt with, I think he has a Hatcher under Narcolepsy, and he has 2 Nest Invaders that are out there, some Eldrazi tokens, and he cast Ulamog, the Infinite Gyre, and he opts to go ahead and destroy my Dawnglare Invoker.
Oh, okay.
And swings in and puts me down to 4 with his Nest Invaders. And so I untap and I go ahead and I mill him once and I play out removal on one of the Nest Invaders. No, not Nest Invader. There's the one toughness first striking red guy whose name I can't think of. So he has a first strike and he has his power is equal to the number of creatures in play. So he's huge because he has a bunch of these spawn tokens out.
Is this a Rapacious one or something like that?
No, Rapacious One is one of the guys who makes the spawn tokens.
Ah, okay.
This is I'm sure the listeners are shouting at their iPods right now.
I'll look it up while you're talking.
Great. So he has that guy out, and since I'm at 4 life, I Vendetta that, which puts me down to 3 life. And I've Keening Stoned him there, and one more Keening Stone activation will get him. And I have an Enclave Cryptologist. Yay! Yay, fully leveled Enclave Cryptologist. Yay, preview card. On the battlefield. But he has 3 guys. He has 2 Nest Invaders and Ulamog, the Infinite Gyre. So I've on my turn, I had managed to mill him, like I said, and then cast Vendetta, and I'm holding up like four or five mana still. Soul Surge Elemental, that's the guy. So that's the guy I Vendetta'd, so I only lose one life because that's his toughness. And that brings me down to three life. So even though I can block Ulamog with my fully leveled Enclave Cryptologist, I'm still going to take four from the two Nest Invaders. Except in my hand, I have Induced Despair, but it's the only card in my hand. So he attacks me with Ulamog. I sack like four lands and block Ulamog with my Cryptologist. Now, once blocks have been declared, but before we go to damage, I tap the Enclave Cryptologist and draw my card. Off the top is a converted mana cost 3 casting cost creature, so I'm able to Induce Despair on one of the Nest Invaders, so I only take 2 damage, and then I get to untap and mill him out.
Nice. So Enclave Cryptologist won you the game, is what you're telling me.
Yes, it did. Yes, it did. That and Keening Stone. So, and then I proceeded to lose the match horribly.
But you got a good story out of it, Eric.
But I definitely had a good story out of that play.
Because you're this newly reborn casual player. You're like, you know what? I had a good time. Therefore, I'm still the winner. Just like G.I. Joe taught me.
I did. And then we did a second draft, and I stunk at that draft. And then on Saturday, I did 2 more drafts, and I stunk on the first draft, and I started stinking on the second draft, and I just said, I'm going to call it a day now.
Time to go home and just count my rings.
Play video games.
Ooh, so we'll talk about video games later, because I do have a pick for this week, so you'll get to pick one as well.
I'll give the one I'm playing recently. I don't know that it's a great game, but it's entertaining me.
And I was talking with Eric, and I were talking before the show, is I'm playing this very fun game that's related to Magic that all of us have played, and that's called Sort Your Magic Cards. And if you're like me, you make decks, they get taken apart, and we all have this drawer or a shelf where you put those cards into. And often you kind of remember where cards are in that, where if you need something for a new deck, be like, I remember it's in one of these few piles, you find it. But at some point, you just have this huge just miasma of unsorted cards. Right now, I have some free time. If people didn't know, I actually finished my Sleep Medicine Fellowship, so I'm right now on vacation. I'm being supported fully by my sugar mama, who is my wife. I do not have an outside sugar mama. So I'm going through sorting just piles of cards where on my bed where I'm sorting them, there's honestly 30 different piles for different expansions. And it's mind-numbingly boring.
Oh, yes. I can relate. In the spring, I managed to get all my cards into block. And for the ones that had colored rarity symbols, rarity.
Ooh, that's nicely done.
Yes.
And the few things I was, if you heard a little bit of clicking before, I was trying to find my pile of colorless EDH lands for a couple of ones that I found the most exciting as I found those. So, Eric, you have to see if any of these have kind of made you excited. Like, there's like Maze of Ith that doesn't give you mana. We have Maze of Shadows, the one that does give you colorless mana or can untap shadow. Mirror in the Moaning Well is fantastic, the one where you can sack stuff to get life.
Yep, got both of those.
Petrified Field, which is one that is kind of cool that I had not remembered. This is in Odyssey. It's just tap.
Yeah. No, I it's in my deck.
Yep. Uh-huh. Basically, you can tap for colorless mana, or you can sack it to return a target land card from your graveyard to your hand. A personal favorite, especially if you're playing the Eldrazi, is Hall of the Bandit Lord. Comes into play tapped. Tapped, pay 3 life, you get 1 colorless mana. If this mana is spent on a creature spell, it gets haste.
I'm not playing any comes into play tapped lands in my mana base.
Oh. Any reason for that, or just happens to be the way it is?
Yes, reason. The artifacts are of slightly lower power value than most other cards. So I feel that, putting myself behind in tempo by playing comes into play tap lands, that I'm putting myself behind the eight ball.
Okay. The other ones that I found exciting was Winding Canyons is a fun one. Tap for colorless mana. This is way back from Weatherlight. Tap for colorless mana, or if you play 2 and tap, until end of turn, you can play creature cards as instants, which is kind of a fun one.
Ooh, no, that would be cool. I don't have any of those.
Yeah, that one is like a 50-cent rare. And the other one, this is fun if you're playing more of a multiplayer EDH, is Miko Koro, Center of the Sea. This is a legendary land. Tap for colorless mana, or 2 and tap, each player draws a card. It is an amazing diplomacy card.
Yes, and I have that in my deck.
And I have my whole collection. I have another one in my binders where we can go. If people like these, we can go through more of them. But playing Colossus EDH is so much fun to have a where every game is truly so different because all of your lands are going to be different, all of your cards are going to be different. It's just a blast.
Yeah, there's a land that when it comes into play, you sack two lands, but then you can tap it for four mana.
Oh, that's Scorched Ruins.
Yes,
yeah, is the like the kind of the ugly brother to Lotus Vale.
Yeah, it does that. And then you go ahead and there's another land that you can pay one and tap to untap another land. Those two go together very well.
Yeah, something Temple, I think. I know which one you're talking about, though.
Listen to EDH Radio or MTG Radio when it comes out this week, and you'll be able to hear me articulate what the name is because I had the lands all pulled out from that deck.
All right, Eric, before we go into my emails, do you have any listener emails that you want to go through?
You know what? I think I do. Let me go quick over to my inbox, and if I do, it would be starred.
So while Eric is looking those up, I'll just let us know. We love to get emails. More the merrier. Because honestly, Eric has been podcasting with me for a while. I've been doing this podcast for much longer than me, my family, or my wife really ever would have thought possible. But it's something, that's kind of what makes it fun to do a podcast. If people haven't done something like this, is that you actually get feedback that, A, somebody's actually listening. Because at some point, there is a little bit of an ego drive to this. Where if you put a lot of work in something, you want somebody at least to appreciate it. And an easy way is to get an email.
Yeah, so Todd emailed us about...
is this the draft videos?
This is the draft videos.
Yeah, okay.
So I have no idea. Sorry, Todd, I have no clue. I was hoping Conley would be able to answer that for you. I emailed him back and suggested that he follow up with Conley and see if he could enumerate on that. Apparently, LSV has a different look to his interface than Conley or anyone else that Todd has seen.
Which is, yeah, so he was just kind of wondering how did LSV get that view, kind of get that outlook for his interface for MTGO. Because Conley, when he watched Conley's draft videos, they look just like what everybody else's interface looks like. And I did not know. So we were trying to. So maybe if you, the listeners, have watched LSV's videos and know how he got that interface, let us know. Because we'll make sure we share that with everybody else.
Yeah, I'm really interested in that as well. And that's a pretty interesting question.
And while you're listening to these emails or for the rest of the podcast, you want to email us, you can email me, Tom, at Pitimp, P-I-T-I-M-P, at mtgcast.com. And Eric, where should they send your kind of various dirty Magic card art suggestions to?
You should send me emails relevant to Magic information.
Oh, okay. I was just making sure they had something to send you.
To Eric, E-R-I-C, at mtgcast.com. If there's another podcast that you want me to appear on, make sure you email those hosts and tell them my email address and have them get in contact with me.
Okay. Because Eric is the new kind of male gigolo of podcasting for Magic right now. Do you have enough money? I'm there. I've got the time if you got the money. So yeah. We'll run through mine here quick. And Eric, feel free to jump in at any time if you disagree with any of these comments.
Okay.
Devin from Canada, he had a lot of good M11 thoughts, and he also says he loves Golden Glow Moth. And I was first exposed to Golden Glow Moth when I played Duels of the Planeswalkers. This is really, I think, a 1-mana, 1-white. Is it a 0-1? I'm trying to remember the stupid cards. Golden Glow, I'm typing it in, yeah, blah, 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 blah. Golden Glow Moth, 0-1 for 1-white. It's flying, it's an insect. Whenever Golden Glow Moth blocks, you may gain 4 life. And this is his favorite card, he says, because it's a moth. Moths are attracted to light, and they glow. He also liked the flavor text of, at least on the one from Shadowmoor, it says, ordinary moths follow it, drawn to its light. So this is probably like, for me, Pitimp. I don't know why I've always liked the card. I do. This is his Golden Glow Moth. Otherwise, it seems like pretty much a average to below average card.
I'm glad he likes it. I'll leave it at that.
Let's see, Jim writes in, people have really, really got behind the dirty Magic card art discussion, and there is way more out there than I ever thought. Because I keep getting emails and more emails with people saying, check out this art. I'm like, yeah, that's pretty dirty. So Jim has a really good one, which he thinks is the best all-time example. So the card that he is recommending is the card Elsewhere Flask. This is from Shadowmoor. And he says the secret of this is you take the card and you rotate it 90 degrees clockwise. And then, yes, It is dirty. So I just want to say thank you, Jim, for that suggestion. And he also wanted to correct his when Jack was on last time. He was talking about his EDH deck where he uses Oolashed the hate scene. He kept calling Olshat. He just wanted to say that is straight up incorrect.
Actually, me.
Oh, okay. That was you saying Olshat? I thought that was Jack for some reason. Oh, okay. Well, Eric, I'm glad you're here because you were wrong.
Yeah, I've corrected my pronunciation. Thank you.
Let's see. Sawyer, he had some ideas. Because I actually have a contest. I'll run this by you, Eric, when we get to that point. Sawyer had some ideas for contests. Come up with a new road deck. Come up with a new crazy multiplayer variant, such as multiplayer Human Centipede, which was fantastic. He also likes the B-movie talk, and he wants to give a shout-out to the games Persona 3 and 4. Dan from the CCG Gamer site, he was not actually angry, but he was just horrified how I'd left out the card Ghost Town in my dirty art description. So I emailed him back that I pulled up the art for Ghost Town. There's only way you can describe this is I just called them dick hills in the back.
Oh.
The one on the right, I mean, that is clearly a glands.
Okay, let's keep going. I concede the point.
Glands is the part at the end. Okay, I just want to finish the anatomical discussion. And a shaft. So, yes. Sorry, I emailed him back, dick hills. Henry L. He enjoys his show, and he jokes about his friends having a new standard format they call Perfect Draw. And this is the way to battle those people when they played in FNMs and other things where they said, well, if I just had drawn this, I would have won. And this would be a standard format where you get to pick your starting seven cards in your hand. And then you see who wins. So I thought that was pretty funny.
Yes, that's awesome.
And also, we had talked a little bit about people wanting to hear a little bit more about Magic history. I always do a little bit on the Tribal Time with Tom show, but people were wondering if maybe doing an audio version of that would be great. And A wrote in saying that Ron Vital, of the Magic Sock, who we're actually mentioned later on in the show, used to do a segment of this called Blast from the Past. And he said you can still find the old episodes online, and you can be finding some new episodes online right now. So,
yeah, I remember this segment from the Magic Sock. And what he does is he decided that he was going to go back throughout all of the Magic sets, and he started at Alpha and went back and hit the highlights of them.
So I thought that was really cool, and what we'll just say right now is that the Magic Sock is now actually back. He just released episode 201. Email me. It's going to be coming out on MTG Cast again, just like before. And make sure to check it out, because Ron is back. And he says it may not be weekly, but still going to probably be at least a few times a month. And it's going to be the Magic Shock that you... The Magic Sock, not the Magic Shock. That's a whole different thing. Don't ask for that at a store. You're going to be horribly surprised. The Magic Sock will be back. And coming to you pretty regularly. I think people are pretty excited. That was really the original Magic podcast.
Yeah, and I've already listened to the episode, and it's the same quality stuff he put out before.
And he also had to put in his thing for the dirty card art, and this is probably the original dirty card art. And this is Living Wall. We're talking Alpha, Beta, Unlimited, Revised. This is the regenerating artifact wall, which was still pretty cool at that time. And the art is just grotesque. There's teeth and looks like testicles and colons and inclusion cyst, all types of weird stuff on this art. So in its own way, it was kind of dirty. I remember there's always all these theories about were those testicles or not. Did you ever have those discussion, Eric, about...
No, I just found the art disturbing.
Oh, okay. Apparently, that was just me. let's see. Another listener who wanted to remain nameless recommends you check out the original Onslaught art for Glory Seeker, or known as Glory Hole Seeker. And basically, because it looks like his little sword holders. This appears to be dangling down in just the incorrect way, and again, it looks like a penis. As we can guess where most of these are going to go. There's so many out there. Like, once we start having a discussion, it just boggled my mind.
Oh, yeah. Yep. You put the magic playing populace on a subject, and they will unearth all kinds of dirty information.
Yeah, this is basically dirty card art crowdsourcing, and I like it. Let's see, Jesse D. writes in that he's in the I Have Never Heard of Using Baby Powder in That Way group. He has enjoyed Arch Enemy, and he has done some mixing of Elder Dragon Highlander with Plane Chase with Arch Enemy. So all together. And he also recommends probably one of the worst movies I have watched. I took his recommendation and went and watched this. Is there's this company called Asylum Home Entertainment. They make direct-to-video movies. But really their recipes for success is they take... If there's a new release movie, they release a B-movie, almost a knockup of that, with a very close, similar name. So, like, when Transformers came out, they had Transmorphers. When The Day the Earth Stood Still, the new Keanu Reeves just abomination remake that came out, they made The Day the Earth Stopped. And he wanted to let us know that in 2010 with the new Sherlock Holmes movie with Jude Law and Robert Downey Jr., is they made Sherlock Holmes. But this is one where it's kind of like a lost mystery that he solved that involved a T-Rex, a Kraken, a dragon, and also like an Iron Man in the same movie. And it is terrible. Terrible, terrible movie. And it's on Netflix streaming, so you can go check it out. So I wanted to say thank you to Jesse, because I actually did follow your recommendation on that one. Matt sends in a baby powder tip for Conley when he comes back on. And this is basically how to apply it in a more cleanly fashion so you don't have this big white cloud everywhere. You grab an old clean sock, you pour about 2 inches of baby powder or talc powder into the sock, tie a knot to keep it from falling out, and then instead of just pouring it all over yourself and getting the floor all powdery, you just tap the bottom of the sock on the parts you want covered. This is much cleaner and has more of a surgical strike as opposed to carpet bombing. Hope this helps.
That's awesome.
And it makes sense, but I like the surgical strike as opposed to a carpet bombing. I thought that was pretty good. Because that was the question I had when Conley was like, I'm like, is he laying on his back with his legs spread in the air and like puffing away? I'm
like, go no further. Do not want this image.
Oh, it's already there. Once you've seen Conley, you know, and I imagine this had to be done like on a bearskin rug, like a polar bearskin rug in front of a crackling fire with like a little bit of Chianti next to you.
Tom, you're awful.
Let's see. Matt P., he wrote and he had a lot of things. We mentioned a bunch of these. There's been some potentially rumors of poison returning in the Mirrodin block. He mentioned the NPR running out of foil bolts. We talked about our favorite cards. And we also talked a little bit about the Titans on our
spoiler cast.
And Eric, you took a mass amount of verbal beating for your love of Frost Titan. Do you still love Frost Titan, or did that sour you a little bit to it?
Okay, I never loved Frost Titan.
You just admit it. Yeah, you love Frost Titan. It's okay.
All I'm saying is that if the other Titans didn't exist in the cycle and people saw Frost Titan, they would think it's a fine card.
Like they say, there's a goose for every gander. There's a Titan for every person. Yours just happens to be Frost Titan. So that is the name of this podcast, Eric Lewis Frost.
So Eduardo T. bought Arch Enemy yesterday, and he told Tom, it is awesome.
Yeah. Every once in a while, I just get these awesomely short emails, and that was one of them. I thought that was just very cool. Dustin B., he wrote in, he's like the talk about when people first learned to play Magic in the old days, where we learned out of the tiny microscopic microfiche instruction mail that came in the starter deck. Pretty much all of us played it incorrectly for potentially a long period of time.
Oh, yeah.
And he said one of his biggest play mistakes when we first started playing Power Sync. He says, he thought if you couldn't pay the difference in mana, we simply emptied our mana pool into our graveyard, our mana pool being our lands. So this acted as a one-sided Armageddon.
Oh my God, that's so awesome.
And they said, of course, and this is the way it worked, is you didn't have a ban restricted list in a casual group. You made your own. They said, we quickly banned this card because it was considered unfair.
In Cube today, I was playing against a deck that had a bunch of X spells. I sided in Force Spike and Force Spike to Power Sync on my Liliana Vess.
Nice. That did feel kind of good.
Yes.
Let's see. He also said he learned how to play Magic better when he started getting the Inquest magazine, which I'm a huge fan of.
I'm going to drop off now, Tom. Talk to you later.
Okay. So we'll kind of run through the last couple of emails here, then our last little bit of Magic news. Matt G., he really enjoyed the spoiler podcast. He liked the really balanced debate between Tom and all the other people. We had Eric, we had Conley, we had some really diverse viewpoints on this. And he also found the discussion of the whole Esper Charm debacle. And we won't rehash this. Take a listen to our M11 preview podcast where we go through this. And this really comes down to judging Esper Charm, picking a modes, and judging by intent. That's really what the overall crux of this whole discussion was judging by intent versus judging by what the player is actually doing. And he also gave me a big nostalgia trip by recommending the card Razorback. This was the movie Razorback. This is a really bad B-horror movie about this enormous warthog in Australia. And how it tears up houses. It's big enough to kill a house, kill people. Terrible movie. Jacob M., he is interested in potentially hearing about more standard matchups of different areas and also different eras in the past. where his example is if you take the Jund decks of today and have them face against the red-green Fires of Yavimaya deck of the past, is how these decks do when they play against each other. And that's something maybe pretty interesting to hear about. Let us know if that's something you would like, or if you have some knowledge about this and would like to simulate some of these, let me know and we'll help you out, add that into the show, we can play your segment, whatever you'd like to do. I think that'd be really interesting. And he also talked about the experience of his first ever Magic tournament right after Mercadian Mass came out. Casual player had his first, you're cool, your best deck among your friends goes, and this was during the heart of the Yawgmoth bargain combo deck days, which was not a fun time to play if you were not playing one of the top decks. Nathan, and he sent in, this was actually interesting, Nathan sent in some background, or a Dark Tutelage, this was our exclusive M11 preview card, and the flavor text they were talking about is, it is a rough road that leads to the heights of greatness. This is attributed to Seneca Epistles Transgumer. And Nathan wanted to send a little bit more information about this. And he says, while I highly doubt that whoever chose the flavor text intended all that much beyond setting down a cool vibe for the card, you could look more deeply into the flavor text. For Seneca was a Stoic philosopher who was the Roman Emperor Nero's tutor and regent. Nero, of course, was famously decadent, self-absorbed, and corrupt, while Seneca himself, despite vociferously preaching humility, the virtues of poverty, and the long road one must take to reach true virtue, has been denounced as a hypocrite in both times, both ancient and modern. As I said, I highly doubt Wizards of the Coast was thinking too deeply here, though kudos if they did, but the flavor text could be read as a sort of a mockery of the tutor Seneca's empty and hollow profusions of virtue. Or it could be read as a reference to Seneca's willingness to do dirty deeds for the greater good. He apparently covered up some of Nero's murders in hopes of redeeming him. Both scenarios are interesting. So it's pretty fascinating when somebody who has some background and further training and knowledge about this and a high-level education can say that, wow, maybe since Wizards is really digging deep when they put the flavor text on these cards. I sort of made light of it, but apparently there's actually some history behind it. Ben F. also sends in a dirty card art. He's suggesting out the 10th edition art for Denizens of the Deep. And yes, it looks a little unusual. Dominic S. has a new Magic blog that's focusing on the casually competitive player called completelycasual.de.vu. You can go check that out. I also want to say thank you to Matt P. for a great email with contest ideas, M11 thoughts, and more. Andrew L. writes in with a YouTube clip to a 9-minute video of an overweight guy in a business suit promoting this huge two-handed broadsword. And while during this commercial, he is hacking through frozen meat with a greatsword while talking about how awesome it is. And there's comments where he says, I just purchased this sword, and I have to say every day it feels like I'm going on a quest now. I use it for everything from cutting my steak, slicing my pizza, lopping heads off of hogs. It is always epic. He also wants me to give Jack a swift kick in the nuts for his douchebag EDH decks. Last but not least is Aaron E. He sends in his piece of Dirty Magic Heart art is Highway Robbers. And again, yes, it looks pretty bad. There's a very old matronly lady. The highway robber is doing something unmentionable. And the flavor text is also good, where it says, tonight, madame, it is your money and your life. So very good. MTG Cast News, that's it for emails. We love to get these. You can email me. I am pitimp@mtgcast.com. Eric had to leave here to go check on some family stuff. You can email him at Eric, E-R-I-C, at mtgcast.com. And we'll be going to MTG Cast News. Eric is back. I appreciate it. I thought he just left me to my lonesome because I was going to be talking about, warts and wart removal and pus-filled things. If I was really left to my own, Eric, who knows where I would be even after like 5 minutes. Because I have Eric, I don't know if you realize this, I have a whole list of dirty animals to talk about on the show.
Have you seen, just trying to be quiet as if I wasn't here.
Have you seen that on the top of the show notes that I've had this on there for like a month?
I started to ignore the top of the show notes.
It says, I'm going up there right now for you, Eric. It says, and I always have this little area of things that if we slow down, I have something to mention. I have cool animal trivia. I have Tom's theory on colored tank tops and wife beaters. I have a theory on these. I also have just, the usual collection of gross patient stories.
Yeah, let's avoid those.
The one animal I want to share with before MTG Cast News, and I have a bunch of these, is the Argentine bluebill. This is a type of duck. Have you ever heard of this duck, Eric?
I think I have. I think I've heard of this on Monday Night Magic before.
Yeah, did I mention the bluebill? That has it has the this is the longest vertebrate penis in relation to body length.
I'm pretty sure that you have.
Oh, okay. Did I tell you that was corkscrewed as well? It's like shaped like a corkscrew.
I did not know that.
Yep. Okay. I have a lot more about this in the future.
Why did I come back?
I don't know. I was saving this just for you, just to shock you. Oh, Tom, I got another call from my family again. Call right back. I don't hear the phone ringing. It's on vibrate, Tom. So, MTG Cast News. Wanted to say we had a fantastic time on our exclusive M11 preview podcast. It was an hour-long podcast about one exclusive Magic card. But, and this is in relation to one of the emails while you were taking care of the family stuff, Erica's. We had some people that really enjoyed the in-depth discussion of the whole Esper Charm debate.
Oh, I'm glad.
So we actually had a lot of feedback saying that a lot of people really enjoyed that podcast, and we had a lot of fun making that one. We gave Erica a hard time about Frost Titan and all these other things, Esper Charm. We did our M11 picks, and we got a Dark Tutelage card, which a lot of people found to be probably pretty damn good.
Yeah, I have to say that I always find these casts really interesting when we have an opportunity for a really good in-depth kind of controversial subject. You know, it's great to be able to take some different sides on these things and just kind of hash them out and figure them out. I still don't know where I end up falling on this, on how the rules should handle this situation.
Oh, I have to agree. As I know we had the long debate. I agree. I see that it's a slippery slope when judges are bringing in ruling by intention. That I do find. I agree that Esper Charm is probably templated in a way that's wonky. That, as Aaron Forsyth said, if they were to redo it, they would template it differently. But I agree is that I don't think a judge would be saying, well, obviously he intended to do this. Especially, and this is all based on Cedric Phillips' article about this play at a high-level Magic tournament, where his opponent was playing Esper Charm and said, I'm targeting me. And this all gets down to modes. So I'm actually pull up Esper Charm so I can read this to you verbatim what is on the card. And this says...
And we're not going to hash through all the argument right here. If you really want to hear a complete in-depth analysis of the argument, go listen to our preview cast. It's about halfway in. And Conley and I go at it.
Yeah, well, and I have to see where I can see the two sides where if I was a judge, if I was in a casual game, I'm with you, Eric. In a high-level tournament, I can see where they're going where you shouldn't be trying to decide what he actually meant to do.
Yeah, if you do this in a casual game, you need to find new friends. You're going to have to find new friends.
Yes. And where this came down is Esper Charm says, choose one, destroy target enchantment, or draw two cards, or target player discards two cards. Where this whole debacle comes down to is his Cedric Phillips' opponent says, I'm playing Esper Charm targeting myself. And multiple times, Cedric's like, are you sure you're targeting yourself? Well, of course, yes. It's not, in some ways I'm playing, of course I know what I'm doing. And then he's like, okay, we'll discard two cards. And the judge got called because the opponent was thinking, well, by targeting his hit, he was picking the draw two cards clause. Because in the game state, it made no sense for him to make himself discard two cards. So the ruling was made that the intention was that he meant to actually draw two cards, and that's the way that the game went, if I understood correctly.
No, it's the other way around. Cedric clarified like two or three times, and then called the judge, and clarified while the judge was there. And when the guy went to go resolve the spell, Cedric's like, discard. And the guy's like, looks at him, and then looks at the judge, and the judge's like, yeah.
So oh, okay. I missed it. Okay, so I thought there was this whole discussion later on that the intention was...
Well, yeah, a level 5 judge, Sheldon Menery, came onto the message board for the article and put down that the judge got the ruling wrong. I don't think he used that term. I believe what he said was that he basically just said that they should have ruled where he got to draw the cards. And I think the crux of that comes down into is that, you know, you hear people talk about it, but there are situations where you might want to make yourself discard.
Oh, definitely.
And the crux of the question is that, yeah, I mean, everybody knows. I'm sure Cedric knew the guy wanted to draw. The dude knew he wanted to draw. The judge knew he wanted to draw, but he said the wrong words. But there are cases when you use those words that you're indicating that you want to discard. So how is someone, a competitive tournament Magic player, supposed to know, did he mean draw or discard in that say without asking a leading question about the modes, because you're supposed to announce the mode of the spell when you cast it.
Mm-hmm.
But then Cryptic Command is a great example. You'll say Cryptic Command targeting you know, whatever spell the guy just cast, and, you know, a creature that's on this board. Well, everybody knows that means you just picked two modes for Cryptic Command. You picked counter and bounce.
Mm-hmm.
And so announcing targets is a legitimate shortcut for modes, which is kind of where the argument comes down to it. So the question is, you know, how should you really rule that?
And so, I mean, I would say it's definitely worth listening to our M11 podcast just about that, because it's really a good viewpoint to see the two sides to it. And really how passionate, I mean, both you, Eric, and also Conley were for the two sides. That's what really made it a good discussion.
Yeah, because I was really passionate about the fact that the guy should be allowed to draw his two cards. And that's the way I want it to work. But I'm worried about it working that way as well. But, you know, Limited Resources in their latest podcast also discussed this and compared it to angle shooting and poker, which
I have no idea what you're talking about right now. I'm hearing buzzing, hissing noises.
Yeah.
How about pro poker? Tom tunes out.
Yeah, you should listen to their discussion on it, though, because it's very interesting, their take on it. And I can't do it justice, but they have a really good take on it. It's very interesting as well.
The last few MTG Cast news items is mentioned before, the Magic Sock is back. His episode 201 is up right now. You can find it at mtgcast.com. And Eric, you wanted to also, again, probably mention some of your kind of podcast pimping you've been doing.
Yeah, so this week you ought to be able to hear me on Monday Night Magic and also MTG Radio and most likely also the Mana Pool.
Yeah, I want to actually let you know that this actually does cause me stress, because when you show up in these other podcasts, I actually get Twitter messages saying, Tom, why aren't you on these podcasts? Why is Eric on there? Why is not Tom? I'm like, Eric, do I have an internet leash on Eric or like a bell on this guy? Like, I don't know where he is.
Well, so let me explain how come I'm on these podcasts and Tom isn't. Okay. Eric is the guy who has way too much time at work to listen to podcasts, whereas Tom, I have to actually listen to what patients are telling him.
Again, so, the buzzing drone.
So therefore, I listen to all these podcasts. Well, I get an email correspondence with these podcasts, and I'm known for being on Monday Night Magic for one thing, and then get to talking to them. And you know how you get email conversations with people. You start to feel like they're your friends or whatever. And so when I've had time available, basically read, my family is out of town and I'm not.
If they're out of town for too long, Eric, the police get involved. Eric, your family's been gone for a couple months now. What's up with that?
Yeah, well, this is why the span of time I've been on these podcasts has been 2 weeks. You know, my family is coming back in town tomorrow. Matter of fact, after I'm off the podcast with you, I have to go finish making all the beds and vacuuming the rooms because, you know, I've been playing Magic and playing video games instead of doing other stuff. but that gives me time. And they record on other nights of the week. And since I don't have to shuffle my kids to or fro, and normally that's what that time would be used for.
Yeah, I can't wait for this, Eric. At some point in the near future, I'll be entering the parenting world, and it scares me to death.
Oh, yeah. It'll definitely eats up so much time. It's not even funny. I mean, seriously, my schedule involves every other Monday, or two Mondays out of the month, I'm busy with one activity. Tuesday every night during the school year. Wednesday, two Wednesdays out of the month, I'm busy. Not necessarily corresponding to the same two Mondays.
Okay.
Thursday is a free night. Friday usually, you know, something's going on. Either my wife wants to do something or I want to do something, you know, or the kids have something we need to take them to. Saturday is usually booked all day. And then over the summer, we go see the St. Louis has an outdoor theater called the Muni.
Okay.
We have season tickets to that, and we go see Muni shows. Sometimes we take the kids, sometimes we have babysitters. So all summer, Saturday nights are all out. Sunday is, you know, church and then other stuff around the house, and then it all starts over again. You know, and besides that, I have to, like, you know, go to a job and stuff. So I try to keep up with Magic news.
Yeah, which is – that is also in its own way a very busy thing.
Yes.
So everybody, this is the official end of the Magic portion of the show. We're going to have our brief little – we're going to do video games this week, so if you don't want to listen about video games – you can log off. Again, we thank you for listening. join us next week for even more M11 cards, as we have 16th is coming up very, very soon for the pre-release. And so we're going to be getting more and more cards in the full spoiler list.
Yeah, and isn't next weekend the pre-release?
Isn't it, right? Oh, yeah, sorry. The release is the 16th. That's when the set.
So I know I will be attending probably the Sunday pre-release is my plan.
Thank you. In my mind, I always think of the release as the day that the packs will be in stores. But we'll be able to get our hands on some of the cards next weekend.
And I, for one, am going to be happy to stop drafting Row. Rise of the Drazi has just kicked my butt as a draft format.
So you'll be ready for kind of a fresh landscape.
Oh, yeah.
So, Eric, what you mentioned you've been doing some video game playing along with your other male debauchery here. What have you been doing?
Yeah, so I've been playing X-Men Legends for the PlayStation 2.
Not sure if I'm familiar with that one. I know Marvel Ultimate Alliance, but I'm not sure if I know X-Men Legends.
Yeah, it's a storyline. You're a character who has just discovered her mutant powers or whatever, and you play through, you do different storyline things, and you have different missions where you get a team of four X-Men. You get to go out and fight, your miscellaneous thugs and major villains and whatever. So I find it entertaining and a lot of fun. I'm an X-Men junkie, so it's like the one comic series I still collect. And so I've been playing that. I actually restarted it because I've started it like two times in the past. And every time it's like a year goes by before I play it again.
You're like, I don't know what's going on anymore. I got to restart this game.
Well, I forget where I've which of these things is my latest edition or what's happened. And for a while I tried to one of the reasons why I got the game is it with the multi-tab for the PlayStation, you can play up to four people. And my wife likes the X-Men, so I thought, well, my wife and my kids, we can all play this together, be family bonding time. Yeah, not so much. My kids both want to be Wolverine because he's pretty much the simplest guy to just go hack and slash through things. My wife has really no interest in playing multiplayer video games whatsoever. And so really I just realized that, yeah, this is...
So it's just you in the basement with X-Men Legends and the shake weight. That's kind of just no shake weight. Sad little man cave.
Almost correct. But, okay. No shake weight.
And mine is, if anybody has a Nintendo DS, this is a game that you must buy. And this is a game called Picross 3D. Picross was this original puzzling game for the original Game Boy. It's somewhat Sudoku, like the original Picross. It was a grid where you had numbers along the top and the bottom, and you kind of would pick out squares to make a picture. And then there's a sequel that came out in Japan, never came in the U.S. So there hadn't been one of these games for, 10-plus years. All of a sudden, they came out with a 3D version for the DS and is one of the best games of the year. So all it is a cube that has numbers on the side, and then you have to pick out with your stylus, you kind of crush cubes that aren't supposed to be there, and then you can mark the ones that should be there, and then you make like a three-dimensional picture. So it's a 3D puzzling game. And there's 300-plus puzzles, and they release free puzzles, I think, on a weekly or monthly basis. I haven't tried to update this. But it's a game that will suck you in. The people over on Giant Bomb, which is my personal favorite video game website and podcast, is that they love this game. I think it's $19 brand new. It's just a phenomenal deal. Do any of your kids have a DS, Eric?
Yes, they both do.
This is one that
I Googled it and I've brought it up and it's starting to look interesting.
It is. I'll send you a link. The Giant Bomb, they do these things called quick looks where they play the game for like 20, 30 minutes so you can see what it's like. They do a quick look on this game, and that I already was going to buy it because it was Picross. But I think if you've never seen the game before, that gives you a good idea what it is, and also why it's oddly addicting. It's when you hear a description, like, why would I care or even want to play a game where I'm marking boxes and destroying cubes? But it's just addicting you because you start to try to visualize in your mind, and you want to solve it. You can get 1, 2, or 3 stars in every puzzle. My whole goal is I want to get it perfect on every single puzzle, which has now taken me a couple of months. And I play this pretty much in all my free time. And it's also a DS where you can save the game at any time, so you can honestly play it for 5 minutes. Save your game, and you can come back later. So I'm not sure. For your kids, are they kind of like early teens, maybe?
No, not even that close yet.
Okay. But
this is... who cares about them? They both have the Pokemon games.
Yes, I have. Do they have the one with the Poke Walker, where you walk around with your Pokemon on it?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that one's awesome.
So, but, like, my daughter just likes the Pokemon. She doesn't like actually solving any of the games. So I end up playing most of her games so that I can keep her even with my son.
Ah, okay.
But so, I mean, this is a game that, you know, who cares about the kids? I might play this myself.
Yeah, this one I cannot recommend highly enough. I have another friend that's a big video game guy. He has a DS, but he's never played any Pikrush games, not usually a big puzzling game. He tried this one out, and he's trying to keep up with me, where he's not quite as obsessive as I am, but he has become unbelievably addicted to this.
So my question for this is going to be, do you have multiple saves? So, like, can two or three people save on the same game?
Yeah, you can have up to four different profiles on the same cartridge.
Yes.
So there's basically four save slots.
That's great, because this way I can save my own game, and I don't have to worry about the kids. So.
And it's very easy to tell right in the front which one is yours. It says your name, like, right on it, and you just push that. Be like, I am Tom. Boom. I'm in my game.
Yeah, so that's a big selling point for me, the multiple saves on the same thing. Yeah.
Another game that, again, probably be more along your line, Eric, would be, it's called Puzzle Quest 2. Did you ever play the original Puzzle Quest?
I did not.
This was, I think it's called D3 Interactive. They took the game Bejeweled, where you match three gems or more in a row, and then they disappear.
Uh-huh.
They took that, and they combined it with a role-playing game. It sounds bizarre, but it was utterly magical how well this worked together. It was like chocolate and peanut butter finally being put together in video game form. Where it is a role-playing game where you got spells and armor and weapons, but when you battled enemies, you played this Bejeweled game, where when you matched the gems, that would give you mana to cast spells. And you'd match skulls to do damage.
I think I've heard of this game before, but I've never played it now.
And they just came out with the official sequel. This company has tried to beat this genre into the ground by making some really crappy knockoffs for some other systems and for the DS. They came out with the official sequel, Puzzle Quest 2, came out about a week or two ago, and it is really, really good. I cannot recommend it highly enough. That is the other game.
Puzzle Quest and Puzzle Quest 2.
Yeah, I would recommend if you're going to start fresh, just go with Puzzle Quest 2, because that's out right now.
Okay.
And they really streamlined some of the things that were really irritating with the first one. And again, you can...
Sort of like, you know, when you get started with a podcast, the first one, you know, has some rough edges to it.
Yeah, the first couple hundred maybe have a few rough edges to it. Then it starts getting dirty.
It starts getting dirty. You spend a whole half hour after the main topic's done talking about something completely unrelated.
Yeah.
But people still tune in and like it.
Yeah, exactly. You're like, I've got them addicted now. I can do whatever I want. I can just moan and fart into a microphone now, and they're going to listen and email me. Tom, I really appreciate your casual approach to farting. That's the way I approach farting, is casual.
Oh, Tom. You know, Tom, when I started podcasting with you, you seemed like a very straight-laced, you know, guy. And something happened about the time we got Conley and Jack on the cast. It's like they unleashed the inner Tom, you know, the one who is being held back. It's like, no, I need to be on the podcast. I need to be professional. And then it's just like, I have these jokers on. Yeah, who cares?
Yeah, we're going down that hole now. We're going on the penis jokes, whatever we got tonight, we're going to go with that. And one of the reasons for that is, after you've done this for a couple hundred straight episodes, you have to keep it interesting for yourself as well. And at some point, you just got to do that. You just got to be dirty.
Well, it's like one of those things, I'm not into being dirty. It's just not my thing. So anyway, that's hence the reason why I have the role I do on the podcast, to get us back on topic. But I've noticed, like, on my Mr. Suitcase podcasts, when I started off, I did a lot of, you know, talking about drafts and different things like that. And it's hard for me to continue to do that. I start talking about, I'm like, does anybody really find this interesting? I mean, I can't imagine that I would listen to it. And I'm like, well, and I don't listen to my own casts at all, because
yeah,
I can't.
I'm with you.
Yeah.
I don't listen to Monday Night Magic. That's why I've never listened to it afterwards.
Yeah, I mean, you were there for the conversation. It's like, it's fun to do, but when you listen to it again, you hear all these things that just grate on you. Yeah.
I hear every and ah and deep breath.
yes, without a doubt. And it is so much worse. I listen to other casts, and even like occasionally I hear one or two, or you kind of pick up what's going on, and you're like, it doesn't bother you. When it's you, you're like, oh, I'm so horrible. Oh, yeah. Why did I do this?
And then you're editing it, so all you hear for like an hour is the pauses and the different things you have to cut out. You're just like, that's all I did was like breathe into a microphone for an hour. I didn't actually talk. I just breathed into a microphone and didn't say anything.
Yeah. So, I'm trying to focus my Mr. Suitcase stuff a lot more on interviews.
And people love those. So I think it's a pretty good way to go.
Yeah, it's just tough to get them all set up. Yeah. So, anyway,
Eric, should I let you escape so you can start kind of being the house husband and clean up the house there and stuff?
Yeah, I definitely should. Since
I'm a house husband right now, so that's why I'm talking about. I'm doing grocery shopping tomorrow, so there you go.
I did grocery shopping today before MTG Radio. I want to call them EDH Radio.
Well, I mean, that's what their email address is, EDH Radio.
Oh, okay. I think that's part of the reason why. Mm-hmm. The other thing is all they do is talk about EDH. I mean, they primarily talk about EDH, so.
Which is cool. I mean, that's why we want a podcast about EDH, and they do a fantastic job.
Yeah, so if you guys haven't checked them out, you know, go ahead and listen to them with me this week, and then listen to some of their other stuff, too, because, you know, I'm sure I brought it down a notch.
And EDH also tends to be somewhat more timeless as well, where, I mean, new cards come out, but EDH decks, you could listen to one from a year ago, and it's still going to be a good podcast, because you're still able to use what you learned on that podcast for an EDH deck.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And this week, they're going to be talking about Kraj. So
you might turn it. I might need to tune in on that one, get some tips.
Or, you know, if they're talking about Kraj and you want to come rebut some of their stuff, contact them. I'm sure that they'd let you come on the show.
And I do have a lot of free time right now. That's actually a fantastic. I have my Kraj deck in my bag right now, so I can just pull it out while we talk.
There you go.
My nicely full art painted one that Steve got me.
Yeah, that we were talking about that on the cast.
Yeah. Oh, really?
Yep.
So you're talking about me now. Not only you're whoring yourself out, but now you're talking about me behind my back.
Tom, half the time I'm on a podcast, I talk about
it. Sweet.
I mean, really, I mean, you know, I may be making all these little spot checks at different podcasts coming on, talking some, and, you know, getting to express different parts of my personality. But when it comes down to it, you are the godfather of MTG Cast.
So yeah, make sure you know that. That's how you stay the godfather. Got to watch out for the other people. Want to take you out. I'll wake up with, like, Jack's head in my bed or something like that. It'll be from Eric. You're next.
I can't believe people email you and Twitter you about why is Eric on these casts?
She's like, Eric was on there. Why weren't you on there? I'm like, I don't know where he is. He's going to show up on Jack's new above average porn site for guys, and I'm not going to know that either.
If I show up on that site, it is no doubt a Photoshop job.
I tweeted, I was mad because, like, he talked all about AboveAverageGuyPorn.com, and I'm like, hey, I believe I was there for the creation of this concept. I believe I should at least get a name drop in your little article about it. Or maybe I shouldn't want that, but I still felt slighted.
Oh, I am studiously ignoring that whole facet of things.
So, Eric, thank you for joining me today. It was a fantastic podcast. I'll let you get to your very, very fun cleaning duties, and I will edit up this podcast into a single file for you to download and enjoy, which, if you're listening to this, you've already enjoyed.